You visited me. You visited me. This week, I've been behind. I've been behind for several weeks. This week, I felt behind. And I've spent a lot of time catching up, working to get ahead on the class that I'll start teaching next Tuesday night, this Tuesday night, the History of Christianity class. And as I've been doing some reading and reflecting on it, I've been reminded of some things that I sometimes forget. And maybe you've forgotten or never knew. In the first 100 or so years of Christianity, being a Christian looked a little different than it does today. Not only because they were from the other side of the world, and so they had darker skin and bigger noses and darker hair than most of us. They spoke a different language than we do. Most of them couldn't read or write. There are those differences. They ate a different diet. They lived differently. But that's not what I'm referring to. There's a single verse in the Gospel of Acts that usually strikes Christians as utopian. A pie-in-the-sky dream. After the day of Pentecost, it says that Christians lived together and held everything in common. They owned things together. And as any had need, they gave it to them. If somebody worked, and they gave the money to the whole group. If somebody didn't work, that was okay. They were taken care of. As you can imagine, that didn't last very long. But something from that did. In the first couple of 100 years, if you were a Christian and you were out traveling and you needed a place to stay, all you needed to do was find out where a Christian lived. And if you went to their house, they would shelter you. According to the Didache, the teaching, for up to 3 days, no questions asked. After 3 days, they thought you might be a bit of a sponge. But 3 days, no questions asked. If you were out traveling and you got sick and you were a Christian, the closest Christian community heard about it, they would come and they would take care of you as long as it took. If you were hungry, they would bring you food. If you were a widow and your husband had died, they would provide for you. If you were a child whose parents had both died, they would adopt you. No questions asked. It did not matter if you were from a slave family or from a rich family. It didn't matter how old you were, what nationality you were. If you were a Christian, you were taken care of. In fact, Christians are the first community as a whole to bury all of their dead. If you died and couldn't afford to bury you, your family couldn't, or you had no family, the church, the earliest church, before they even called themselves the church, would bury you. The oldest Christian cemetery in the world has been found. It's outside of Rome. It dates to about 60. And it's filled with the graves of poor Christians who could not afford burial themselves, but who the church in Rome paid to bury. We do a lot of good things as the church these days. We give our money and our time to people who are poor. We give to the food pantry and the soup opera. We give our clothes away. If we see a need, we usually will quietly meet it. A small need. But we do not claim to house any Christian that travels around and needs a place to stay. And we don't feed every Christian who's hungry. And there's not a line item in our budget that will bury poor Christians who can't afford to have themselves buried. We've lost a lot of that in the last 1800 years. One of the other things from the earliest times that we've lost is visiting Christians in prison. It used to be a responsibility for all Christians. Just as much as you would clothe somebody who needed clothes, or feed somebody who was hungry, or bury somebody who didn't have any place else to be buried. If there were Christians in jail, you went to visit them and to take them clothing and food and to care for them when they were sick. And we can say, well, times change. And of course they do. And we can also rationalize and say, well, there were fewer Christians back then. There were. They were a persecuted group, and if they didn't look out for themselves, nobody else was going to look out for them. That's true. And as far as the prison visitation goes, well, it was an illegal religion for 200 years. It's not illegal anymore. If there are Christians in jail today, it's not just because they're Christian. They must deserve it. So we rationalize those things away. We can't afford them. We're too busy. The need's not there. I suppose all of those things are true. We are busy. We probably are busier than the ancient people. It's one of the things electricity has given us the talent to be. When it's dark, we keep working. When it's cold, we keep working. When it's raining, we keep working. So I imagine we are busier than the ancient people were. And given that there are so many more Christians now, we don't have enough money to house all of them. We don't. We don't even have the space. If every Christian in Fairmont suddenly found themselves out of their home and needed a place to stay, we could not physically house them all here. We couldn't. That's true. But I think when we rationalize all of those things, we miss out because we forget why those things were so important. They were so important that they get mentioned in the Gospel of Matthew. Feeding the hungry and clothing the naked and caring for the sick and visiting those who are in prison. Those are the marks of being a Christian back then. We don't think of them as marks of being a Christian today. But aside from practicality, what would doing that do to your faith? How would it affect you if you fed people who were hungry? If you thought that as a Christian that was your first task in life, to feed the hungry, and to clothe the naked, and to shelter the people without homes, and to visit the people who were sick in the hospital, to visit the people who were in prison, how would your faith be different than it is? Well, certainly the centerpiece of your faith would not be being here on Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock. Would it? This is not made to make you feel guilty or me feel guilty. As I've been reflecting on this, I've been trying to figure out what is it that all of those things have in common? What might a faith that puts those at the center of itself look like? And you know what I keep coming back to? Super Bowl parties. I know. I keep coming back to Super Bowl parties, and it's not only because it's week two. No, I come back to Super Bowl parties because the first party I ever threw was a Super Bowl party. And I haven't thrown one since I got here because, frankly, I'm not very good at it. The last time I threw a Super Bowl party, I was finally ready for the Super Bowl party by the end of halftime. And if you do that, if you're stuck in the kitchen cooking, you can't watch the game, and you can't visit with all the people you wanted to spend time with. You can't be a good host. I'm a lousy host at that because I'm still in the kitchen. But that's what all of these things have in common. We call it hospitality. That's a fancy word, but it's being a host to someone. Seeing somebody who needs something, who's in an unfamiliar territory, and doing something for them, being with them. Seeing somebody who's hungry and saying, not while I'm around, let me give you some soup. Seeing somebody who's got a torn shirt or big holes in their pants and saying, you know what, in my closet I've got a pair of jeans that I think will fit you. Hearing that somebody's sick, sending them flowers, making a phone call, sending them food. Hearing somebody's having a hard time, and not only do you make sure that you call, you make 10 other calls to make sure 10 other people make a phone call too. That's hospitality. Connecting people together. Seeing what their needs are right now and trying as best as you can to help them out. You would never let somebody come to your home and not offer them a drink, would you? Ever. The challenge, though, is to remember to do that when we're not at home. It's easy to feel like a host when it's your house. After all, people come over, they don't know where the bathroom is or where the cabinet with the glasses is. They may not know what all you have to drink or eat. It's not that we're selfish. But if you don't tell them, chances are they're not going to get a drink or something to eat. And let's hope they don't know what's in your closet. If you don't tell them. We do that naturally. Some of us a lot better than me and others. But we do that naturally when it's our home, or when it's our church, or when it's our office, or our school. We do not do it naturally if we run into somebody at Walmart, or in the park, or at a rest area. And we certainly don't do it naturally if we run into them in our cars. But what would it be like if our first instinct was to say, this is a hard situation for that person. What could I do to make it easier? What would life be like if our first instinct was to say, there's somebody who's having a hard time. Maybe I can do something to make it better. What would it look like? I've been thinking about this week. It occurs to me that was the greatest gift Jesus had. Yeah, he's the Son of God. I don't want to downplay that, but yeah, he's the light of the world. But that's not what people saw on a daily basis with Jesus. What did Jesus do with the people that were around him every day? He made them more comfortable. He gave all of them something. If he saw people that were hungry, he fed them. If he saw people who were sick, he healed them. He didn't make them sign a contract. He didn't make them recite a creed, prove they were good Jews or good anything. He just helped them. And those 12 disciples, or however many there were, following him around, they seem incapable of doing anything for themselves. But not when they're around Jesus. However many there were around them, they get taken care of. Jesus is the ultimate host. That's why one of the greatest parables is about the wedding feast. About the father who sets out a banquet for his son's wedding and invites everyone to come. That's not just a story. That's how Jesus lived his life, except he didn't live it in a big mansion. He lived it everywhere he went. If you came in contact with Jesus, you felt better. And it wasn't because you said, oh, it's God. And it wasn't because you said, oh, it's the light of the world, the Prince of Peace, the yada, 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 yada. It was simpler than that. It was because he treated you like an equal. It was because he asked you how you were doing. It's because he helped you out in some way. It's because when those pesky Pharisees came around asking their theoretical questions, Jesus gave back as good as he got. And you didn't have to deal with them at all. They would have looked down on you otherwise. Because that's what the Pharisees did a lot of the time. If you weren't a Pharisee, they looked down on you. Jesus wouldn't allow it. He wouldn't allow anybody to look down on the people that were around him. You can call it a miracle. You can call it divine. And it's those things too. But it's not out of our reach. It's what we do on our best days when we invite people over to our house for dinner. Or what we do when we go visit somebody in the hospital. Or when as a teacher, and I've had teachers tell me this, and we find out that our kids don't have quite enough money for lunch or for school supplies, the lunch or the supplies quietly makes their way into that child's hands. No fuss, no show. We just do it. That's what Jesus did. Except he didn't just do it once in a while. He did it with every step he took. But that's hard. How do I know it's hard? Well, I'm about to find out exactly how hard it is. Because my job from Thursday through Sunday is to go into a prison where I don't know anybody, where I've never been. I won't know where anything is. And I'm sure I will feel like I don't belong there. But my job will be to be a host for people who live there as a way of showing Christ's love to them and sharing Christ's love with them. That's my job, those 4 days. And that's the job of all of my team members, our team members, that are going down there. It's hospitality. We're going to be doing things as simple as getting people coffee and asking them if they like cream or sugar, a question they don't get in prison. Trust me, the guards don't ask how many creams and sugars they want when they bring them their morning coffee. Right? But I will. And I don't even drink coffee. And I will listen to their stories and laugh with them and cry with them and put my arm around what I'm sure will be much bigger shoulders than mine. But it's not that hard. And I don't have to go to prison to do it. That's what I've realized this week. I should be doing it more, period. I don't need training to do it. I don't need to go with a big team to do it. I'm supposed to be doing it naturally, or learning how to do it better with every step I take. We all are. We all are. What were the words of that song? Breathe, share, shine. Breathe on us, shine on us. But then the bridge. Breathe through us, Jesus. Shine through us. Live through us. That was the gospel lesson this morning. That is the gospel lesson this morning. It was the way the first Christians lived. They didn't have any choice. If they didn't live that way, there were a lot of people out to get them, and they would die. But instead they found each other. And they said, no matter what other people do, we're going to look out for each other and we're going to love each other. And we're going to make sure each other makes it through day by day the best we can. We're not the government. We can't protect each other fully. We're not a big army. But we can love each other. And when people are hungry, we can feed them. And when their clothes get ragged, we can get them some new or new to them clothes. And when they're sick, no matter how dangerous it is, we're going to take care of them. And trust me, caring for the sick 2,000 years ago was a lot more dangerous to the caregiver than it is today. A lot of those caregivers died caring for other people so that they would live. And if they get arrested because they believe Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God and their Savior, well, we're not going to forget about them. We're not going to let them go and just add them to the prayer list and hope they come back. We're going to go see them. We're going to make sure they get taken as good a care as they can be taken in prison. We're going to take them food and clothes and medicine. And we're going to let them know that they're still a part of this community. That's what Jesus did every day. And that's what he asks all of the people who call themselves by his name to do in his place. And the promise of the gospel is that if we do it to anybody, Jesus says, you do it to me. You feed somebody who's hungry, you're feeding me. You clothe somebody who's naked, you're putting clothes on my back. You visit somebody who's in prison, I was in prison, I was beaten and executed, you visit me. And I'm grateful. Just as you and I are grateful in that situation. But it's hard. This is a world that's pretty inhospitable. Our job as Christians is to make it less so. And if we feel unequal to the task, hear the gospel again from a different part. I am with you. I am with you. And I will protect your going out and your coming in all the days of your life. That is our challenge. But it's also our gift. It's our grace. It's our potential. And it's God's hope for us. So as much as you're sending me out this week to visit some people that we've never met and that frankly scare us, we all are meant to be sent out, not just this day, but every day of our lives as Christians, to share Christ's love with those we meet and to make them a little more comfortable, to feel a little more welcome in this world. Breathe on me, breath of God. Breathe through me, breath of God. Breathe through all of us. This day, evermore. Amen.